And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, listen, before I go any further, I got to tell you guys, so ZLA Solutions, you hear their ads on our show. Listen, they've been with us since this show began. And I was talking to them yesterday. These are friends of mine, and they have been doing an amazing job at putting people and jobs together. If you're looking for a job right now, let me just encourage you, go to their website, ZLAUSA.com. They've got great jobs posted all over North Alabama. You can find them, big-name employers, some of them with benefits, all of it. Check it out, ZLAUSA.com. But if you are an employer and you need people, it can be onesies and twosies, or it can be a entire shift of people you need to get staffed out. Blue collar, white collar, no collar, it don't matter. ZLA Solutions, that's what they do. That's their bread and butter. I mean, they help you with, they can help you with logistics, sorting and containment, warehousing. They do all kinds of things, but their bread and butter is really staffing. And they like to say, at ZLA, we don't make it, we make it better. That's their mission in life, is to help you make your business better. Check them out at ZLAUSA.com. And do me a favor, tell them you heard about it on Right Side Radio. So, hey, by the way, got to tell you, we have some guests already lined up for next week. You're going to enjoy this. We've got Senator Tommy Tuberville scheduled for Tuesday. He'll be on the show Tuesday. And then we've got Congressman Barry Moore will be on the show on Thursday. So already getting some of our folks from D.C. lined up. Very important, because the National Defense Authorization Act, the NDAA, basically the budget or financing for our military, just passed the House yesterday. It has to go now to the Senate. It apparently did remove the vaccine mandate for the military. And the question now is, can they get it through the Senate that way? Well, it was a Democrat-controlled House still. I mean, Republicans have not yet taken the majority. That happens after the first of the year. So it was a Democrat-controlled House that did pass a budget with a lifting of the vaccine mandate. It remains to be seen what will happen in the Senate. And then, of course, the president still has to sign it. So there's a lot of ways to go. Yeah, I want to hear what Tuberville thinks about it, and I want to hear Congressman Barry Moore's reaction to it, among other things that are going on in D.C. So we'll be talking to them next week. All right, listen, as we move through this section here, I'm going to move through school money and school choice. Now, this $2.7 billion, I agree with one thing that Arthur Orr said, Senator Orr, a moment ago. This is not all sustainable. Some of this is one-time money. Some of this is like windfall money. And when you get a windfall, you look at, okay, how do I spend it effectively now, knowing I may not have it next year? So I get the pragmatism. He's a budget chairman. His job is to balance the budgets. But I also appreciate the fact, though, that he is looking for some means of giving something back, and that's important. However, the world of people in the education arena is already out there with their hands out right now. Article here from ABC 3340 that came out yesterday, talking about the same thing. Alabama lawmakers must find a place for an extra $2.7 billion. Well, local school systems are already saying, we've got ideas. We need to do these things. We need extra funds to provide services. We need to help with our technology. One former teacher said she believes it ought to go to providing relief for teachers in the classroom. I don't know what that means, except I think she means they want extra teachers or teacher's aides. She said, she's the president, by the way, of it's Erica Hughes, president of the Central Alabama American Federation of Teachers, a teachers union. Says it's time we put hands and feet back in the classrooms, because those are actually the people working with the children every day, says the union rep. Another one, a retired educator, says she believes, having worked as an educator for 28 years, that retired teachers ought to reap the benefits of these funds. Retirees should get a one-time cost of living adjustment, because I'm retired, and when I'm making retired, I'm still having to supplement with another job. I get it. But you know what? Every time you do those things, every time you hire somebody or give a raise, that's not a one-time. That stays in there for perpetuity. So the question now is, what are they going to do with it? They got to do something. $2.7 billion extra dollars. What a great problem to have. All right, we're going to continue this theme, start moving towards the idea of school choice. How did the schools in your area do on the latest school report card? We'll talk about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. This show covers some ground, man. I'm talking about we're way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. And I got sidetracked there, Boomer. I was texting with the lovely Charlene. So it just dawned on me. Your thumb was up saying, we're back on the air. And I'm like, I need to talk now.
Bad. I got to go.
Okay. Sorry, honey. I had to stop texting. All right. Listen, we're in this discussion right now. School money, school choice. That's what I'm calling this section of the Triple Dipper. So school money, school choice. How does that all come together? Well, see, some people think that the way you improve education is to keep throwing money at it. Not so. Not so. Now, you got to fund things, certainly. You got to staff them, certainly. They got to have facilities that are adequate, certainly. I'll never forget when I was in the legislature in the state Senate, I had some opportunity to give out education grants. A portion of the education budget, each legislator was allowed to give localized grants in their area. And people are always like, hey, Senator, you got some discretionary funds? Hey, Senator. I mean, I had things like the YMCA asking me to give them some money. And I was like, come on, y'all. But then, you know, I used to give some here and some there. And I had one guy who literally his thing was, you don't give much. You give a little bit here, a little bit there, so you can spread it out and see some people see you do something everywhere. I was like, no, you know what? Finally, I got to thinking, I want to be impactful. I realized one day that I had all kinds of different small towns in my district that I just grew to love. I mean, places like Altoona and Center and Cedar Bluff and Steele, little towns that just, you know, I just fell in love with them, and they just embraced Charlene and I, and I loved serving those people. I realized one day that Steele elementary school didn't have air conditioning. And I was like, what? How is that possible? Now, I didn't have the ability to put air conditioning in the whole building. But by golly, those kids do PE now in a gym that has air conditioning, because I was able to just go ahead and say, I'm not putting piddling grants out here and there. I'm going to take a big old chunk and just put it in one place and try to change some lives. Well, there's things like that that have to have funding. You have to improve the lot in life of some. But what I love is finding out that some schools who don't have a ton are doing well with what they got, and that some have local communities that do rally around them. And I recognize, too, the teachers' union, they hide behind, well, parental influence is so important, and we don't have much parental. I get it. So your PTA sucks. I get it. But the truth be told, it's like looking at, one day Charlene and I were driving by, you know, someone's home, a residence, let's just call it that, and it was so obvious they don't do a thing to take care of it. And it was a very modest house. It was not a big deal house. But I looked at it, and I looked at her, and I said, you know, you can live in a shack and still sweep the floors. And you can take care of what you can be a steward of what you have. Well, that's one of the things that I think has to be looked at. One of the reasons why school choice is so important is because it brings a level of competition into the public school arena, and it makes people recognize that sometimes they might have to do some things differently in order to be seen as achievers. Right now, there's no competition. You go to school where you go to school. It's your zip code that makes a difference for the vast majority of kids in Alabama. And, you know, why try? You know, we don't have a good PTA here. We don't get nothing. Nobody cares. Care. Just care about what you said this is your job. Care. And by the way, there are wonderful educators out there in some of the poorest schools who are doing a lot with little. And I know that because I've got educators in my family, both public school and private school, educators in my family. But I do know this. There are some that sit back right now and let the teachers union tell them that they're victims. And they choose not to look at the idea of competition among schools to be better. Why would you not? Everything else in life, we look at trying to be the best one of what we do. Why is it okay in education to settle for just being there? There's no merit in that whatsoever. You don't look at your job and say, today I intend to go and be adequate. We don't need adequate. We need people who are looking at how they can best take what they have and make more out of it. And if they never get another dime, how they can embrace the role that they have, consider it their calling, and minister to these kids in such a way that they teach them, not just house them. All right, there's my diatribe. That was totally off the cuff. Had not planned it. Boomer, is it time for a break? I mean, I just apparently done a monologue, didn't even realize it. By the way, Boomer's streaming all this on multiple platforms. How many platforms you got, Boomer? Tell the audience right now.
We have four platforms right now.
Four platforms going live right now.
Yep, four of them.
Besides radio.
Yeah.
So we got radio. Lots of radio.
Lots of radio. We got lots of video streaming right now. So we have video streaming on YouTube, on our website, on Instagram, and on Facebook.
Dang, man. All right, so that diatribe right there was heard all around the world on multiple platforms. You ready?
That's right.
All right, here's the thing, though. 1819 News has a story that came out November 19th. In case you're not familiar, the Alabama State Department of Education, because of a law that we passed in 2013 when I was in the legislature, is now required to post a statewide school report card and list whether or not, you know, schools have met a certain threshold. And, oh, by the way, they have to designate those that are failing. The failing schools, I believe, are the bottom 6%. All right? And because of the Alabama Accountability Act, one of the few forms of school choice that we have in the state of Alabama, the Alabama Accountability Act allows if a school is a failing school in that bottom 6%, that you are allowed to transfer out of it and potentially qualify for a scholarship to do so. All right. However, what's always fun, too, is when you recognize there's schools that it's not always about the failing schools, man. Let's celebrate the ones that are doing outstanding jobs. I was pretty excited to see that one of the top four schools in the entire state is literally the school, elementary school here in the Gadsden area where my son used to go. So Eura Brown Elementary School has one of the highest scores in the state. They scored an A of 100% out of a possible 100. Within the listening area, we also had high marks for Crestline Elementary in Mountain Brook, Liberty Park Elementary in Vestavia, Heritage Elementary in Madison, Brookwood Forest Elementary in Mountain Brook, Mountain Brook Elementary School, Mount Laurel Elementary School in Shelby County, and East Elementary in Vestavia. Those are some of your top 10 schools. There were two others in the Montgomery School District that also ranked as A's, one of which, by the way, is a magnet school. So there's that. Within the listening district, I mean, there's failing schools. The only failing school, I believe, on the list within our listening areas is Chapman Middle School in Huntsville, which scored an F, a 51 out of a possible 100 on the statewide school report cards. But, yeah, pretty stoked to see all of these schools, including the fact, since I know most of the teachers at Eura Brown Elementary School, several of whom are personal friends, proud to see them as being an A. But there's things going on within education in Alabama that are not just related to dollars. They're not. And you cannot possibly say that everything in life revolves around how much money you threw at it. I used to be so irritated. We'd be down there in the state legislature debating the budgets and talking about funding of different sorts. And usually it was a Democrat that would go to the microphone and go, "We don't adequately fund education in Alabama." Well, I got news. We rank 50th in the nation, but there's about half a dozen to 10 other states that spend less per child than we do, and they rank higher than us in the scores nationally. Huh. So apparently you can spend less than we spend and get a better result. That seems to imply that Alabama's got some things it might need to change as opposed to money it just needs to spend. One of the things that's very concerning, and I talked about it on the show. In fact, I had State Representative Terry Collins, who chairs the House Education Policy Committee, on the show, I guess about a month ago. This story broke about mid-October. AL.com has a piece on it. Alabama state officials on Thursday demanded better certification pass rates from the state's future teachers. So what happens is this. teachers take what is known, or future teachers take what is known as the praxis exam. And apparently the praxis exam, rather alarming, showed that Alabama in a state report has only about a 53% first-time pass rate. Now, there's a lot of reasons why that's being justified as, well, you know, some people take it like a practice test, or they really shouldn't have taken it in. They just want to see how they do, and that hurts the results. And then some people, you know, they don't try real hard because their school pays for it, so they didn't have the, like, the vested ownership in having paid for the test. Okay, crap. I'm calling crap on it. If you don't want those kind of things to happen, then don't let them happen. Make people be at a certain point in their education process, or make people have to pay for it themselves. I don't care. Remove those obstacles if you really think that's influencing the results. But nonetheless, right now what we're seeing is 53% is the first-time pass rate on the state exam, the praxis. And that's concerning. Huntington College Dean of Education Carolyn Corliss said, some students might not be putting their full effort in that first round of taking the test. Okay, that's bad too. Do we want a bunch of teachers that are like, I don't know, I'll just try it and see what happens? I mean, lawyers don't take the bar exam just to see what'll happen. I thought I'd take it and just see how it goes. This has got to change. But the budget that we got this year, please don't tell me we don't fund education enough, because we have funded education more every year over the last decade than ever in the history of the state of Alabama. In fact, this year alone, stand by, this year alone, we passed an $8.17 billion education budget, the biggest education budget ever in the history of the state of Alabama, since we became a state in the year 1819. Well, Phil, we didn't have billions of dollars in 1819. Whatever. The bottom line is this. We're upfunding education more every year, and our results are staying abysmal. Don't you think it might be time to do something different? Because you know the whole definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Well, yeah. So when we get back from this next break, we're going to move to the second part of this dipper. The first one was school money. We're going to start moving to school choice. And then top of the hour, national figure Dr. Corey DeAngelis from the American Federation for Children. You see him on Fox News and other outlets all the time. He'll be on to talk about it. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid, conservative, just plain right, making it cool to be a conservative. So, listen, let me ask you a question. If you, let's say you move to a new town, and you get to that town, and you're looking to buy some groceries, and you realize there's not but one grocery store. I've used this analogy before. Some of y'all know where I'm going. But there's not but one grocery store in the town. So you go there, and the produce is like kind of sad. The lettuce is kind of wilted. The milk is pretty close to the expiration date. The meat counter is not very well stocked. You know, you're looking at it, you can't even find your choice of cereal. What kind of place is this? And it's the only one in town. Would you be surprised if you then learned that it's the only one in town because that's the one the city council said was allowed to be there? Why would this be? I don't know. The city council decided you're only allowed to have one grocery store, and it will be this grocery store. It doesn't matter whether they do a good job. It doesn't matter whether they stock the shelves. It doesn't matter what their prices are. It doesn't matter whether they have good customer service. It doesn't matter if they bag the groceries. It's the only grocery store in town. Well, what happens if the people say, you know what? Enough of this. We deserve better. And then Sunday, the city council goes, okay, fine. And they allow the open free market to occur. And and another grocery store shows up. And it brings in better produce, good customer service, well lit, better hours. And next thing you know, the first grocery store is looking around realizing all their customer base is gone and they don't know what to do about it, except maybe do a better job at what they should have been doing all along. That's called the free market. The free market works when basically the government gets out of the way and allows for the idea of capitalism to occur unfettered, which, by the way, brings competition, which, by the way, makes it better for the consumer. Why don't we do that in education? Why don't we say in education, you know what? Where your zip code is not the sole determinant of where you go to school. Maybe, mom and dad, you should have the say. Maybe at some point in the course of deciding what is best for your child, you're actually allowed to determine what is best for your child. Maybe you look around and realize that, you know what? The school in my zip code just sucks. And there is no reason in the world why I should be required to have to move and sell our house or maybe get another job just to get my kid to a right school. And so what do you do? So then you literally look around and you realize it's only a few miles away to a school that scored much higher, where everything seems to be a little bit more, I don't know, empowered. And so you just move because you can. You take your kid to a different school because the free market's allowed. You're not confined to the sole source that government said you're allowed to use. So we don't allow that anywhere else. There's no town in America where they're going to say, we will not allow another grocery store. There's no town in America that's going to say, hey, you know what? If you want to build a widget, you have to build it this way. No, go build the better mousetrap and beat out all the other mousetrap builders. But in education, we do. In education, we let it sit there and fester. In education, we're content to take that model I just told you about having the single grocery store and say that government is allowed to dictate that we are only allowed to have that which is adequate. We cannot have anything that excels. We can't have something else that drives the competition into the broader arena of the market. We're literally stuck because government says so. Well, folks, that has got to end. School choice is the phrase often used to talk about how best we drive this to a better resolution for our kids. And I will say this, when it comes to the funding for education, and here's where I kind of combine the two portions of this dipper. This whole dipper is called school money, school choice. Let me just throw it out there for you. If you're talking to someone and they say, I don't know, I mean, school choice, I mean, the school board knows, right? I mean, the teachers, that's their job. They know, right? I mean, the state school board, they know things, right? Okay, let me ask you this. How do you feel about education? Because philosophically, when it comes to money for education, you have to ask yourself a question. Do I believe that those tax dollars that we pay into the system are there to support the system? Or do we believe they're there to support the education of the child? If you believe they're there to support the system, then you're content to say the zip code drives the train and you get to go to that school and that school only. If you believe, though, that the tax dollars are there to educate the child, then you should not care where that child goes to school as long as their tax dollars are being used most effectively for their benefit. And the second question you have to ask yourself is, who is the best to answer what is best for the child? Is it the system, the government, or is it the parent or legal guardian? And I believe as conservatives, the position should always be the parent or legal guardian is the first choice in saying what is best for the child's education. All right, we're going to come right back with a nationally renowned guest, Dr. Corey DeAngelis, the American Federation of Children. He's been on every news outlet in the nation talking about this very topic, school choice. He'll give us the broad view, tell us what's happening elsewhere, and maybe one day we'll actually see it happen in Alabama. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.